This month, we've been considering the spiritual theme of leadership and looking at leadership from the perspective of spiritual practice. And this focus has given me the chance to look at my own leadership here in this congregation. And in so doing, I am confronted with delight at areas of strength and encouraged by the areas where I need to grow, knowing that growth is possible therein. Leadership works that way. Leadership works as a way to grow our spirits and a way of connecting us to something larger than ourselves. And in that process, we are connected to others, and life is given meaning and purpose. But that idea, the idea of leadership as a spiritual practice, and leadership as connection, deep connection to others, is not something that we hear in the popular discourse. It's not something that you would necessarily learn in a business school, I don't think. I don't think our Congress would define leadership in that way. I don't think that our Fortune 500 companies, at least most of them, I don't think that they would define leadership in terms of deeper connection and meaning and purpose. Leadership is understood in the common understanding as a state of being in charge, of taking control of people, ideas, resources to produce some kind of positive and hopefully profitable outcome. Leadership is about results, being the best, coming in first, having the right answers, getting things done, and most of all, it's about winning, because leaders are relentless and they win big. That's the world as we experience it. And in that world, we glorify scarcity and our ability to overcome scarcity by winning. And I believe that this world, the world as we have it, is false. Yes, natural resources are finite, but the human spirit, the spirit of imagination and creativity, is infinite. The life force that moves through us and that breathes through us is infinite. Scarcity, however, is used to prioritize us versus them thinking and us versus them action. It's used to support regimes of fear and of shame in our lives, in our families, in our places of work, our places of learning, and even here in our congregation. In my leadership here, this regime of fear and shame shows up for me in how I try to control outcomes, in how I am reluctant to delegate. Yes, I understand as a philosophical concept that I can't do everything. But surely in practice, if I just schedule correctly, I can do most everything. Right? I mean, who needs sleep? Who needs food, recreation? Besides, if I ask for help, that would just broadcast to the whole entire world just how ignorant and incompetent I really am, right? There is only a limited amount of knowledge, a limited amount of competency, a limited amount of self-esteem to go around, and I must have it all. Otherwise, I'm not worthy of love and respect and connection. This is the world, this is our world, with scarcity at work. A rigid world order powered by shame and fear. It shows up in my life, and I believe that it shows up in your lives too. It shows up in our leadership abilities, and it transforms that leadership potential from something that should, in fact, be spirit-growing and life-sustaining And it takes it away. It turns it into something that, in fact, takes away our life, takes away our spirit, and takes away our connection to other people. You see, it can't be a zero-sum game. We can't always win. In fact, we have to be willing and able to lose. To lose if we ever hope to succeed in life. Now, we can't be a people of faith in general, and we certainly can't be Unitarian Universalists in particular, unless we experience some level of discomfort, some level of dis-ease, some level of resistance to the status quo in our world. And we can only do that, we can only live out that resistance by being committed to a positive change, not just in ourselves, but everywhere we go, in every community that we are a part of. We must act every day, even here, to undermine the status quo. We must do and believe differently. In other words, if fear and shame is a prevailing story in our world at large, and we know that it is, it must not be the prevailing story here. Because here we are building beloved community with compassion, with service, and empowerment. Here we are practicing leadership as a spiritual practice. So that means that we automatically reject fear. We reject shame. We have to be courageous and disruptive in our leadership to do that. We do this when we connect with the inherent worth and dignity of every person, a worth and dignity that is not dictated by their accomplishments or their lack of accomplishments, by their right beliefs or their wrong beliefs, by their right actions or their wrong actions. We say that you are loved for who you are, that you are worthy just because of who you are and who you are becoming. In our reading this morning from the tradition of Taoism, we are reminded to yield and overcome, to bend and be straight. And how blessed are we that our faith allows us to be called by wisdom from ancient sources as well as modern traditions. In the Taoist text, we hear all of creation saying, yield and overcome, bend and be straight. What are the areas in our own lives where we might yield and overcome? Where might we bend and be straight? You see, in the natural world, we are given countless examples of life forms that show their strength in their flexibility and in their suppleness. From the delicate crocus shoots emerging from the still frozen ground to the elegant palm trees that bend all the way to the ground in strong winds and come right back up. We see examples of this flexibility and this suppleness as strength in the strong spider web, a web that is both strong and sensitive. And lastly, we can look to ourselves and look at our largest organ, our skin, and see how it shields and protects us from pathogens and from the elements, and it does this all the while remaining supple and flexible and bending. It remains intact. All of nature shows us the way, the Tao, that strength doesn't come from rigidity, and neither does leadership, but rather they both come from yield and overcome. If only we would listen. So again, I ask, what areas of your life might you yield and overcome? Where might you bend and be straight? If we could expand our willingness to be wrong, to let go of the past and maybe even the future, to lose. If we could do these things, then our openness, our vulnerability, might become our strength. And we might become the leaders in spirit and in truth that our world, our communities, our families so desperately need. The counter narrative that I want you to consider is this one, that leadership is not about winning. It's not about being right. It's not about being in control. It's about this disruptive engagement in our personal lives, in our family lives, and in our community. That disruptive engagement means changing the story. It means privileging connection to each other over certainty and control. It's a commitment to staying at the table, if nothing else, being present in body, mind, and spirit. It's a commitment to look at our failures and see what useful information we might glean from them and how that information might guide our success in the future. Take a moment and think about moments in your life where you've experienced failure and allow yourself to see where there is information that might help you in the future or information that has already helped you even now. There is no reason to be fearful or ashamed. The evidences of our failures might cause us to reach out for help earlier, to find that support before the crisis develops. It might cause us to change our course in life or in love, to try something new. Failures, in fact, make us flexible, more agile, nimble enough to win in the long term. And it's that fear of failure that often keeps us disengaged and not fully present. And we are disengaged when we don't share ourselves, when we don't disclose our thoughts and feelings, when we keep those underlying fears, which might have useful information, under lock and key. We've been taught that vulnerabilities must be kept tucked away in unseen corners. I know that some of the men in this room might recognize these stories that we've been told. Don't be weak. Don't be soft. Don't cry. Often, the well-meaning and sometimes not well-meaning adults in our lives say to us that showing vulnerability is weakness and should never happen. One must be absolutely strong and absolutely independent. The women in this room might recognize the message of be perfect, be sweet, be beautiful in everything that you do, or else you will be punished or shamed. So it's totally understandable that we would not jump at the opportunity to expose ourselves, to risk failure, because the stakes are too high. But that is exactly what we are called to do. I want to tell you just a little bit about the shame researcher, Dr. Brené Brown, who has achieved some level of celebrity after her famous TED Talk on the power of vulnerability. And she describes in one of her books, Daring Greatly, how leadership is an opportunity for us to show vulnerability, to ask for help, to have honest communication and caring communication with the people that we lead, and that our power comes from that sense of openness. And that openness, because it's so countercultural, it's so against the prevailing narrative, is in and of itself disruptive. Disruptive engagement, she calls it. And she writes that if organizations can do this, if people can do this, then we might create sites of learning and creativity and innovation In other words, places where people thrive. We want to create places where people thrive. We want to create places where it doesn't matter what you are doing, whether you are tending the memorial garden, whether you are counting the collections, whether you are building birdhouses with the Sunday school, whether you are sweeping the rug, that each and everything that you do here is an opportunity for leadership and an opportunity for disruptive engagement, an opportunity for deeper connection and meaning. So much of leadership is undermined by that prevailing narrative of total power, control, and perfection, and the fear and shame that is always behind those. So it's time for us to take back the wheel from fear and shame, to choose to be different. And we can make this choice today. Disruptive engagement is a commitment to operate from a place not of scarcity, but of abundance. It's a choice to recognize and to celebrate strengths. Disruptive engagement is about love, communicating in trust, rejecting preconceived notions, rejecting out-of-date ideas. It's about letting go of the need to win in favor of the need to be kind, honest, and most of all, connected. In many ways, it's about losing to win. I want to share with you what I hope is a very funny reflection by the Unitarian Universalist minister Patrick Murphin. And he titles this reflection, "What Unitarian Universalists Should Give Up for Lent If They Have Observed It," which most of them don't. He writes, "Pews without padding, nature conservancy calendars, Volvos, and polysyllabic verbosity. Herbal tea, austerity, National Public Radio, unread books in fine bindings, isms, liberalism, Buddhism, humanism, Marxism, feminism, Taoism, vegetarianism, conservationism, transcendentalism, atheism, consumerism, Sufism, and for Christ's sakes, libertarianism." He goes on to say, "Joys and concerns, pretensions, committee meetings, Habitat t-shirts, potluck casseroles, black and white films with subtitles. We should give up drums and theology, liturgical dance, poetry readings, and pride. Pilgrim pride, pride of intellect, pride of lineage, pride of lions, the pride that cometh before the fall. We should give up bistros and pledge drives, advanced degrees, spirituality, coffee hour, sensible shoes, philosophy, choir rehearsal, gender-neutral hymnals, learned clergy, natural fibers, string quartets. We should give up whiteness and turquoise jewelry, recycling, self-congratulation, acupuncture, bird watching at dawn, yoga, common cause, God, doubt, egotism, self-denigration, yesterday and tomorrow. So much. If the cost of being correct, if the cost of winning ultimately means alienating ourselves from our siblings of all kinds, then we've already lost. We've already paid a price that is too high. So this work is not going to be easy. This work of opening ourselves up in this way, disclosing the fact that we are not perfect. We are not supremely self-sufficient unto ourselves. We are not superhuman. We are not even God. And that acknowledgement might be our greatest challenge. Letting go of privilege, power, and control means losing, and it will take practice, and we will need to fail if we ever hope to get it right. But be encouraged, because our faith calls us to this work. And if our faith does not call us to this work, then we are wasting our time and we are wasting our precious lives. We are called to yield and overcome. Yield and overcome. Bend and be straight. Empty and be full. Wear out and be made new. Have little and gain. Have much and be confused. Again, we come here Sunday after Sunday and other days to disrupt the narrative of dominion over the earth and its people. And we do that with our leadership. So let us shine forth. Let us be distinguished and let us receive recognition. Let us not falter or quarrel, but rather let us be made wholehearted in our homes, in our families, in our workplaces, and even here, so that all things will come to us. All good things will come to us. Blessed be, and amen.